being right on time. So thank you, attorneys, for appearing at the Court of Appeals via Zoom court, which is what we've essentially been operating under for quite some time. A couple of reminders, please state your name and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your argument. We also have a time clock in the upper left-hand corner that you can keep an eye on as far as the appropriate time, 15 minutes for your presentation of case in chief, 5 minutes of rebuttal is reserved to appellate counsel if you choose to use that. At this point, the panel has already been called to order. I'm going to ask our marshal to call the next case for consideration.
Now calling case number A201564 in the matter of the welfare of the children of RJO, JEJ, and JSO parents.
Ms. Walker, when you're ready to proceed, go ahead.
Thank you. May it please the court. This is Elizabeth Walker here on behalf of RJO appellant. This is a case where the parental rights to my client was terminated, were terminated by district court. And in the arguments and the findings of the court, I don't believe the trial court's findings actually reached two reasonable efforts on the part of the county that is in the brief, as well as the efforts that they did make, especially towards the end, were not genuine efforts, that they were just basic efforts. And the evidence that was presented, exhibit one of the appellant's evidence, was an email stream between the social worker and the guardian ad litem, where they're discussing that they have to make efforts or they're reasonable efforts. And even in the findings of the court, for instance, in paragraph 4 of the order, there are some generalizations. For instance, the court, I'm going to paragraph 4 now so I can read that. It states that the client was unable to keep her children safe from dangerous men. There is no finding that after the incident with a Mr. Olson, which he was in prison for, that the children were ever hurt or harmed. There is an assertion that she repeatedly brought romantic partners into her life that either physically assaulted the children or have been firsthand witnesses to domestic violence. And in the totality of the record, the only violence that was talked about or proven was one incident of physical violence. And there were allegations that the children were sexually assaulted, but even by somebody, again, there was a forensic interview that was done that had no findings that the children were sexually assaulted by anyone. So for that to be a part of the assertions is, to me, does not have the sufficient weight because it says that the repeatedly brought romantic partners. She didn't. There's even the evidence that the county is to present. It has to be clear and convincing evidence, which has been held to be unequivocal and uncontradicted evidence that is believable. And that's in Dell v. University of Minnesota, 511 Northwest 2nd, 46 on page 52. And that's an appellate court case from 1994. That's also—
Ms. Walker, you cite to that case on the definition of believability and the importance of believability. The problem I have with your client's position, because there is countering testimony. Mother is saying one thing, the caseworker may say another thing. And the judge hearing this needs to make credibility determinations. And it, what leaps out at me is that the judge in this case actually said mother is not credible. And I think he used some very strong words by saying she lied and continued to make excuses, and that's concerning the home visit. And to me, that is a very difficult burden for your client to overcome if we have somebody sitting in the district court seat making that observation and that finding of fact.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with you that the judge has to determine which is much more credible evidence. But what I'm trying to say here is my client admitted in testimony that she had a gentleman who was in her home, who took care of the children for 15 minutes. And she agreed that she was not forthcoming with that. And that was her mistake. And she admitted that mistake. So I believe what the judge was saying was, yes, she did hide that information originally from the social worker, but then she did come forward and say, yes, I made that mistake. But also she stated once she found out that this particular individual was unsafe, she no longer had him be a part of their lives at all. And that situation, the testimony as to why he was even there was because she had to move because of the situation the county themselves put her into. Now, she admitted to being hiding and being in that particular incident, but there is no other place in the record that shows that my client was being untrustworthy other than the social worker just to state she was untrustworthy. There's nothing in the record that shows that she hid something or she lied about something. And in fact, she was very straightforward and maybe even to her own detriment. And I believe the social workers were just compounding previous reports when they say multiple domestic violence incidents. They have no documented proof anywhere in the record there were multiple domestic violence incidents that the children were exposed to. There's nothing there. There is reference to multiple partners, romantic relationships. They insisted that my client was in a romantic relationship with a gentleman named Jared. Anyway, the issue is my client said no, but they didn't even and provided evidence that he had a girlfriend. The testimony of the social worker was that she never even talked to the gentleman to find out whether or not my client was being open and honest about what sort of relationship they had.
But isn't this all about the judge? You know, and my concern is that it appears based on the behavior, the instances that are repeated in the record, that your client was now making responsible choices and to own up to something that she did, that her candor is appreciated. But responsible choices are important and necessary as far as the child rearing. So did the judge, let's get to the issue on appeal, did the judge err in making that finding or conclusion that she was not making responsible choices?
I believe the judge did err on that conclusion, Your Honor. And that's also a singular issue. Let's say that we dig through the record and you find that my client did not make a responsible choice in getting pregnant. That's in the record. Did not make a responsible choice in having this one gentleman in present. What other unresponsible choices are there? She was going through therapy. She was doing everything the county offered. And more. She didn't have to continue with her mental health therapy, but she was continuing on her own. So I don't believe that the judge was right in saying she wasn't making responsible choices. And also those choices had to have harmed the children, the choices that she was making. And the children were not harmed. They were not, and there is nothing to show that these children were harmed in every single way other than this one incident.
Is there a case law that says there needs to be actual harm that befalls the children before the finding of parent-child duty or culpable unfitness is determined?
No, I believe the case law states that the children, the parent-child relationship, if she puts them in a potentially harmful situation continuously and recklessly, I'm saying she didn't continuously and recklessly put them in a harmful situation. There's no evidence after the one example of what started this case was when she was in a car with Charles Olson and there was drugs found and she did a hair follicle test and there was meth found in her hair. That was the incident that started this entire case. The children and my client admitted, and then she did everything in her case plan required of her, with the exception of that one incident where she had to leave the children for 15 minutes. And I believe that was not continually putting the children in a harmful situation. And especially when the situation was created by social services.
I'm wondering if we could just go back to the reasonable efforts argument that you're making. At the outset of your oral argument, you indicated it in your brief that the reasonable efforts here, or the efforts here rather, were superficial. And I certainly understand the part of your argument that relates to efforts made after the termination of the trial run when the children were returned. Is it your position that before that point, reasonable efforts were not made? And if so, I guess I'd like you to address the trial visit itself, which seems to me to be a pretty significant effort on the part of the county.
Yes, I will address the trial visit first, if that's okay, and then move on from there. Most of my analysis of reasonable efforts is based upon especially what happened after that trial home visit. But at that trial home visit, and it was a short one, my client received a call from the social worker saying, "We're going to bring the children home sometime this week." She got a call in the morning the very next day saying, "We're here." And my client hadn't finished moving her belongings into her apartment yet. And it was in the morning of the very next day. And that was something my client testified about. And there was absolutely nothing in the record to refute that fact was indeed true. So the children came home and my client needed to get some of the belongings, and she had people there helping her move. Mother lived less than 15 minutes away. So she quickly went home to get something and come back. That was the error that she made. And that was the significant event that then later led to my client having the children, then the trial home visit ending. After that, I believe the efforts were very superficial, limiting my client to 2 hours a week and of parenting time, sometimes twice a week, and that time was filled with services that my client, with the family services worker coming in and trying to do some therapy between the mother and the children, but it was very limited. And then the visits went to video only, as in my client made a video of herself to present, and then the social workers would present that video to the children. The children would make a video, and then that video would be given back to my client. And I think those weren't reasonable efforts at reunification. And I believe the email communication even supports further that they already made the plan not to reunify. And they were only doing it peripherally and not genuinely for the optics for the court for when it came time for the termination record. They stopped working with my client in every other way. So anything my client did after that was completely on her own. And the communication with the social workers was very limited and hardly ever took place at that point in time. And in fact, the guardian ad litem had never even come to my client's home to see this environment in which the children may or may not be living in, and made all of her judgments based upon barely even meeting or interacting with my client at all. Indeed, the child one had significant outbursts after successful visits with my client. There was testimony that it was very detrimental to him, and he would have these outbursts for a day or 2 days after having a visit with his mom. But the visit in itself was successful. There was absolutely nothing to show that they were doing anything, any therapy between the two of them together to support this reunification, or to get to the bottom of the reason why those outbursts were happening. And so that was the reasoning the social services used to limit or even get rid of completely the visits, because he was having these outbursts. But there was no testimony from any counselors. There was no testimony from anybody showing that they were making any efforts whatsoever to get the bottom of what was going on. Perhaps he was just having outbursts because he wanted to be home with his mom, which the record is full of him saying that to both the counselors and to his foster parents, that he wanted to be home with his mother. And so they stopped the visits entirely because of his mental health issues, which they did not provide anything to support in record, not even a document, much less testimony from the child's therapist. Did I answer that question, Your Honor? Okay. Any further questions? I guess I have about 1 minute left and I'd much rather answer your questions. Okay.
If there's not, anything else?
I got off there just a little bit. And so the crux of my argument is the reasonable efforts that were put forward by the county, as well as the efforts not being genuine efforts. And then the court using very vague statements that are not supported by evidence in the record, other than just people making a statement without supporting evidence of those statements. So I have nothing further, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. You'll have rebuttal, of course. We'll turn it over to respondent counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm Matt Jorud for Becker County Attorney's Office, representing the Becker County Human Services Agency. There is some evidence that Mother did comply with some of her case plan requirements, but the big issue is that there was really little to no evidence shown at trial that any of the skills she may have gained were able to help her make good decisions and keep the kids safe and away from harmful or dangerous adults. Mother has a fairly extensive CPS history that dates back to Rock County in 2018 and involved the same types of behaviors and incidents. It's kind of a rolling theme where services have been provided to try and keep her and help her keep the children safe. The event that started this case was a traffic stop where drugs were found in the car and Mother was incarcerated as a result, leaving the kids without their mother alone. To make the situation even more concerning, there was a man in the car who Mother had an active danko against. And also there was past physical and possibly sexual abuse from that individual to the children. This lack of judgment is beyond concerning and shows that the services she had received in the past had not had much effect. Now, during the CHIPS case here, the case plan was reviewed quite a few times with Ms. Oakland, which was put forth in testimony. And she stated that she knew she wasn't supposed to have the kids around any unknown men who had not been investigated and vetted, okayed by the agency. Yet she flouted this requirement. About 6 months in, the agency felt she was ready for a trial home visit that started. And shortly after, she had a known sex offender caring for the kids. This didn't happen at the beginning of the case, but at a crucial point when things appeared that they were going well. It was even shown that—
Mr. Jorud?
Yes.
Did the county accept her explanation that it was only for 15 minutes and consider that immaterial, or did the county disbelieve that explanation?
They did not believe the explanation. They believe that she knew he was a sex offender, or at the very least had a very unknown past. There was testimony that—
I guess my question goes more to the short duration of that it was 15 minutes only. Is that undisputed?
That is disputed. They thought there was actually quite a few occurrences where he was around the kids. That was her testimony, but also her testimony was contradictory at the beginning. In the trial, she stated she didn't know his name. And she stated that's not unknown to not know someone's name, which seems odd since you're under a case plan requirement. So you have to okay everybody that's caring for the children. Later on in the trial, she stated she knew his name, but only his first name. Also in regards to that, she had posted shortly within that time frame on Facebook that she was married to this man. When asked why, she stated it was because she wanted to get back at her relatives. The judge in this case found that very concerning and pointed that out at the very end of the trial, so that must have stuck with him. And he stated that's concerning considering what's going on in the requirements of you. Also, there was testimony from her chemical dependency worker that was working with her at that time that knew this man and was a sex offender and stated it was very concerning character, things like that. So the county did not give credence to the 15 minutes and testimony seemed to be very contradictory from Mother on this point.
And did the county have knowledge or evidence about specific evidence about other incidents where the children were left with that same person?
No, that it was all pretty much just from the agency, for lack of a better word, grapevine, small community. So they have their ways of finding information out, but no, there was no other evidence of anything more than the 15 minutes. It should also be highlighted that the other concerning, I think the court found this concerning, was that prior to our trial, the mother had traveled down to South Dakota a couple hours to do trial prep, as she called it, with Mr. Oakland, who is one of the other fathers that was terminated in this matter. And during that short meeting, she became pregnant, and she had stated that it was twins and she had lost one of the twins, but she was still pregnant at the time of trial. So she stated that, and nobody knew about that. She didn't inform the agency, which was concerning because this individual just got out of prison and is on heavily supervised probation for a long time for rape of a minor child and also child pornography. He's also the father of one of the kids in this matter. And Ms. Oakland stated that she defended him. She stated that it was consensual. He was, was a bad rap. It was unfair. She wants him involved in the kid's life. And that was very concerning to the court and I think everybody involved. And this happened right before the trial. So it wasn't like this happened, 9 months ago. This is right when, a very crucial point of her case. And I think the other thing is she didn't inform the agency. This was news to everybody. And she just kind of played it off like it was normal. The other thing I think what I would like to point out is that these incidents were happening when the children weren't in her care. They were obviously in the custody of the county. But it's very concerning that she can make the statement that she didn't put the children in harm's way when, in fact, her behaviors are backing up everything that has kind of put us here. She demonstrated throughout the entirety of the case that she's not capable of making responsible choices of whom she brings into her life. And I think she tried to really kind of say, well, what I do when I'm away from my kids is my business, which may be true in theory, but in reality, when you have young children, anyone that you bring into your life who has significant time with you is probably going to have effect on your children in some way, shape, or form. Ms. Mother also stated that she'd been receiving mental health services for 21 years, give or take. Despite all of that, she just doesn't seem to be able to make smart choices in regards to romantic partners, and bringing them around the kids. We also had a Dr. Dahlin testify extensively in regards to her parental capacity assessment. And she stated multiple times that mother has a personality disorder that really cannot be treated with therapy. It can be managed, but stressors seem to bring out this personality disorder. And really that overtakes anything she has learned in regards to therapy or coping mechanisms. I guess one of the other things I think the court found concerning, or they pointed out, is that at no point really did mother take any responsibility or accountability for her poor decision-making. The court pointed out that her testimony at trial was rife with lies, excuses, and shirking responsibility while placing the blame on the agencies and others around her. It seems that she's proved time and again that this personality disorder will dictate her life choice. Reasonable efforts, really mental health and chemical health evaluations were given and therapy was set up. They were targeted to meet, and also the aforementioned parental capacity. All of that was targeted to identify the primary issues to help mother be reunified. Again, stating, Dr. Dahlin has performed over 120 of those assessments. The court pointed that out and found her assessments credible. Coney also provided parenting education and help with housing and transportation where they could. The court felt that all services offered were adequate, accessible, consistent, and realistic, as evidenced by the fact that a trial home visit was eventually implemented, which usually means there's some success. But even after, and the trial home visit ended obviously about, I think it started 6 months into the case. It made it a couple weeks, maybe a little more. And at that point, it ended. The agency did continue to offer the same services and support despite, some of the issues and difficulties caused by the pandemic. Really, the big one was visitation was difficult because that was right when everything was, when there was just so much unknown. So they were doing the best they could. They were using the services they had, the efforts were consistent and similar to any other case they have. And in regards to, I guess one thing I'll point out is that they had a parent coaching set up, a parent coaching class, and mother stated she wanted to do it, but as of trial, she'd never done any of the sessions despite them being offered. So I believe there was even testimony by at least one of the caseworkers that had worked primarily on this case that they probably put quite a bit more time into this case than other similar cases that they had. So I don't believe that argument carries any weight.
And that Mr. Jordan, would be is, mine. Mr. Jordan, did the district court ever make a determination that reasonable efforts are not required, the determination described in section 260.012 paragraph A? And did the county ever ask the court to make that determination?
Did they make the you mean during the life of the case?
Right, before the trial.
No, it's practice here. I think we usually always require it till the end. So I don't believe that finding was made.
So then what reasonable efforts were made after the trial home visits?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. The same.
If you could summarize, please.
Sure. It was the same service. It was a parenting education was offered, the therapy, the same services that were going on before. So it basically just picked up from where it left off or continued, for lack of a better way to put it. So they didn't cut any services off. They didn't drop anything. They just continued on with what had been working.
But what about supervision? Or what about visits?
Visits were offered. So I think there was behaviors with the oldest boy, and it was becoming very difficult for the foster family to manage those after visits. So they had moved it to videos. He was having a very hard time, and it all correlated to any time they have a visit that these behaviors would come out. So they moved it to video. And at that point, it was late in the game, but they kept doing that.
And those behaviors have been expected. I mean, you've got a kid that's 10 or 11 or somewhere in that time frame, and you have a visit with your mother. It's not as if you're oblivious to what's going on in your life. Was there any basis other than his adjustment that was what you call his behavior issues with the foster parents?
Well, it was a lot of do you mean like the specific types of behaviors or?
Well, you've been arguing in your brief argues that there was that there were behavioral issues when the boy would return from a visit or have time with his mother. And to me, it just seems you don't need to have a medical or a psychological explanation. He's 10 years old. You see your parent, you understand, you cognize what's going on. And I'm just wondering if there was anything in the record that showed that any behavioral or outbursts were other than what would, I think, would be purely natural for a child.
No, I agree, Your Honor. And I think they took that into effect the first few weeks, but it seemed to be escalating. And that was the correlation they had was just the visits were causing it. And I think they were really trying to open things back up to in-person. They were trying to get there, but like I said, it was late in the game. So I guess
I'm way off what we're on now, but you know, there's so many studies visiting children that were terminated from their parent in older age, and the fact that, you know, maybe that's almost a worse environment for the child just because of that age. That has no reflection on your case, but that was the reason I was asking.
I don't dispute that, Your Honor. I agree.
Anything else, Mr. Jordan?
I think that's all I have, Your Honors.
All right, we'll turn back then to Ms. Walker. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Sorry, I almost forgot to unmute. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate my 5 minutes. I'm going to talk fast because I have a lot of issues. At first, as to the parent coaching that was brought up by the county attorney, if you look at the record and the testimony that was provided and even the affidavit supporting the petition for termination, it states that parent coaching wasn't made available to my client and that they were not counting that as not completed. The judge's findings of facts made the statement that parent coaching was offered. She wanted it, but she never took it. But if you look at what was made by the statements of the social services in their affidavit, was that because
They did visits in Moorhead. Moorhead's Parenting Time Center did not offer parent coaching, and the local supervised center does offer parent coaching, but that's not where they were, so that was not available to her. So they did not count that as something she did not complete. The judge's findings, however, states the opposite. And I think that we need, I mean, that's just one of the areas where I believe the judge didn't have supporting evidence that she did, she wanted it, it wasn't made available to her. And that's supported even by the county's own evidence. As far as the foster parents and the behavior of kids, there is, again, in the testimony, sufficient testimony that there was concern over the foster parents. There's email going back and forth about how the oldest child were having outbursts and what was the issue with the type of discipline they were using with this child. But his room was barren because their response was to take things away, and that the foster child or the child one in and of himself reported that he was, the discipline he was getting was making it even more difficult for him. So that was an issue. And the child was never even put, the child was moved into an intensive therapy foster home after that, separated from his sister during all of this. And that was a concern, but somehow my client was not able to see her child because of these outbursts and how they were being handled. And it was in the testimony, she did, the visits themselves went fine. It was his behavior after the visits. That's what's concerning to me. Dr. Dahlin, initially Dr. Dahlin's report stated that reunification could happen if there was therapy. It wasn't until trial that she changed her mind and said reunification is not advised because of information provided to her by the county. She never re-interviewed my client. She never asked for more information. All she did was take what the county said, and that was that she was lying about her relationship with this one gentleman, and she was intentionally exposing the children to dangerous individuals. That was it. So all of a sudden, no reunification, even with her. And that is a significant part of the findings. If you go back to the original report, it did state reunification, even with her personality disorders, where possible. That's concerning to me that that part didn't even make it into the findings. As far as Mr. Dorrud's opening statement, that he stated that the skills gained would, my client never showed or proved skills that were gained to due to her therapies and reasonable efforts and things like that. Well, I'm sorry, she didn't have an opportunity to, and it's not her job to prove she has skills. It's the county's job to prove that she doesn't. Again, and that wasn't in the record. I mean, in fact, the home visit initially before this incident with the gentleman that was there for 15 minutes, it was fine. The kids were happy. The visits that were taking a person, the county said we were going well. So those are skills that she's showing, and that's the only opportunity she had to show that these skills were working that she was going through. The alleged physical abuse by Charles Olson, number one, it was physical abuse towards my client, not the children, and that's what he was in jail for, and that's why there was a DANCO. The sexual abuse that was alleged, there was a forensic interview and no evidence was found. And so it was alleged, again, alleged sexual abuse. And again, there was the rumors that it was more than 15 minutes that my client was with this alleged individual. There were rumors. That's all they had. They had no evidence. You need more than rumors to support evidence that my client was exposing the children to other people. Again, it was not my client's burden. It was the county's burden, and they failed to reach that burden. Everything was based on hearsay and rumors. There was no evidence presented to support these allegations against my client, other than the one incident, and she admitted to that. She admitted that domestic violence was hard for her children. She admitted that. She admitted she learned from the incident, from the arrest, and that she wanted to continue counseling, even though her counselor said she didn't need to go anymore. She talked about how this particular person in this type of counseling was helping her significantly. I don't know what else my client could possibly have done. Yes, she made an error, but she was sober, had a place to live, had a job, was consistent. She had to move and she didn't have help. She met the gentleman when she was in treatment. That's how they met. That's what she was exposed to. Nothing further. My time is out.
I want to thank both attorneys for the arguments today, as well as the briefs. Both were done very well. This is an expedited hearing, so a decision will be issued within 45 days. Thank you again for appearing.
Thank you, Your Honors.